I want to talk to you about a bully. We hear a lot about bullying today, don't we? There's a bully that is bullying you and bullying me. You don't have to be in school to be bullied by this bully. You can be at work, you can be a stay-at-home mom, you can walk any path, but today you will undoubtedly encounter this bully. It's the bully of fear. For good reason, most of us would say. That's not imagined. Yeah, there's phobic fear and all that, but this is real stuff. Fear where you can identify someone that is or something that is a threat. That's the kind of fear I'm talking about. Looked at the news lately, and you'll know exactly what I mean when I say in New York City and other big cities, there is a new game, they call it. Some do. Some sick people do. And it's a game where people walk up to pedestrians, unsuspecting, and they cold clock them, which is fighting words for they hit them as hard as they can in the head, hoping their aim is to knock out the person with a single punch, a sucker punch, most would call it. There's the game. It's gotten widespread attention in the news. It's not just a New York City problem. It's a problem that is spreading. There's a lot of copycats out there, meaning there's sickos in all kinds of places, right? And the weird part is that they do this while being filmed. So all this is going on, and there's somebody with a camera, probably a cell phone camera, that takes footage of this and posts it on the website, which means they are, that makes them as dumb as they are mean, because these people hopefully get caught and prosecuted in a big way. Now, here's my point. Ask anybody that lives in a city where this has gone on and ask them a, you know, innocent question. Hey, what's it like this magical time of year for you to stroll down the street and window shop? Remember that practice called window shopping, you know? Just go, we go to malls now a lot, but, you know, take a place in the Pearl District or someplace in Portland that's got lights and life at night, and it's fun, and, you know, there's Papa Hayden's desserts, a good, you know, sort of destination spot and all that. We window shop. If this practice called knockout was going on in our city, how many people do you suppose would answer, you know what, I don't feel at all safe doing that? In fact, this bully is so far-reaching that you don't even have to have what we've seen in the news in New York and elsewhere happen in your city for you to go, you know something? I think I'll do all my Christmas shopping online. Fear has been around for a long time in lots of forms. It might surprise you. Did you know that women rank the fear of snakes at the top of their list? Would you turn to somebody next to you and go, ooh? Come on, get into it, people. Ooh. There you go. Hold on, there's one for men, too. Did you know that men ranked the fear of being buried alive as their top fear? Turn to a man near you and go, I don't blame you. All right? Now, what's on your list of things today is a commercial that a local store uses, but I want to know what's on the list of things you fear today. Let me share you with you a couple on my list. Bad health diagnosis. Can I just be candid with you? When I'm around people that are sick, or we say in medical circles today, terminal, and then I hear him say, you know, I didn't see this coming. No sign, no sign. No symptom, no symptom. I'm 50 now or so. And I used to blow that off. I was a kid. Doesn't happen to guys in their teens or 20s. Now I'm like, could be me. So a bad health diagnosis. I've got that lump in my throat or that, you know, persistent something going on. And by the way, I don't have a lump in my throat. You know, I'm okay. But you wonder, could that be the start? Could that be the thing that I didn't see, I didn't know about? It's a sneaker wave. And it makes the rest of us feel a little scared. How about running out of money? I know a lot of seniors with a lot of money who wonder, will I outlive my money? Because all I am is one bad development away from being put in a very expensive place to live out the last inning of my life. And now what? I'm out of money. How about being single for life? You know, two are better than one, Ecclesiastes 4 says. How about being single? It's kind of a fear. About some that are married and wondering, married for life, you know? Right? Just having a little fun here, okay. Here's one, having children. You know, maybe it's a fear for you. I don't know if I'm good at it. I don't know if I could, you know, I came from a crummy home. What makes me think I'm going to overcome, you might think, those things that happened to me so that I don't just pass them on to my people? Some have that kind of fear. I've talked to people with that fear. You know, I don't think I'm going to have kids. Why? Because I had a horrible childhood, and I don't want to repeat it. I'm afraid I might mistreat my kids like I was mistreated. That's the language. That's what I'm talking about. There's a whole bunch of others. You know, the phobic fears, heights, the fear of drowning, the fear of being in a packed elevator and it stops. Has that happened to you? I got sweaty palms the second I said that one. That happened to me. It's a great story, but we don't have time for it right now. So, I mean, seriously, the fear of germs, the fear of public speaking. Yeah, it varies. That doesn't bother me. That doesn't make me nervous, you know. Anyway, all right, so here's the deal. Unless I miss my guess, most of our lists of what we fear, at the top is death. If I knew that somebody this morning had a gun and planned to use it on me, it would change my feel here in the pulpit. I'm trying to keep my eyes moving around and seeing y'all. Not because I think you have a gun. No, not that. But because I want to maintain some kind of connection, right? But if I knew that man with the gun over there is actually gunning for me, do you think I'd just continue the smooth flow? Or would I start to kind of, I'm making this whole side of the room feel uncomfortable. Would I start to kind of focus on them and, you know, is he moving for his Bible or is this the big blast, you know, kind of thing? Because fear of death is high, if not the highest on our lists. Here's a shocking statement I want you to hear. In fact, if you'll open your Bibles to Matthew 10, I want you to see it as well as hear it. Okay, so Matthew 10, verse 28. It's a shocking statement that completely disagrees with what I just said. When I said the fear of death is at the top of most of our lists, look what Jesus said should be at the top of most of our list. Verse 28. Now you're ready. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Don't fear the guy with the gun, is what Jesus is saying here. Don't fear that guy. Who are we to fear, according to verse 28? Fear him, is what it says. Fear him. Who is him? Should be on your mind as the next question. And here's the shock to some. It's not the devil. Who is him? God. That's who him is. Do you see it again? Look at the word, or the pronoun one. Be afraid of the, it's capitalized for a reason. It's drawing attention to the one who determines human destinies. Not the devil. What's the song? The body they may kill. How great is thou art? How great thou art? No. No. Mighty fortress is our God. Yeah, Martin Luther had it down. You know, don't fear the devil. He can't touch you. He can't mess with you without going through a review process in advance. That's for another sermon some other time. This one that we're to fear, according to Jesus, is God. Why? Because he's got the power to determine our eternal, we have a fire going? Thank you. Fear fire, that might be another one to throw in there too. And where is Ted Whiteman when you need him? He's in Africa, our firefighter. But anyway, thanks, Annie, wherever you went. I've observed this, that people tend to be fearful of things that we're not to be fearful of. But they have little or no fear of things that they are to be fearful of. Think about that. Okay, I'm going to quote a verse right now. And I want you to have your pen out because you need to write two words down. Okay? I'm going to quote a verse. And if you think you know the two words that I will omit, that will be missing, I don't want you to say them out loud. I want you to write these two words down, the two words down, okay? So I'm going to quote a verse, and I'm going to omit two words. If you know the two words, do not say them out loud, or you'll be responsible for wrecking this effect on everybody else, okay? So, the fear of blank blank is the beginning of knowledge. Okay, no one answer yet. The fear of the two words, blank, blank, is the beginning of knowledge. By the way, that's in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7. So just so you know, it's a real verse. Okay? Let's throw out some possibilities before we say out loud what we think those two words are. The fear of rising prices. Anybody have those two words there? The fear of mean landlords. Some of you are landlords. I realize that's getting close to home. But the fear of government websites. The fear of airport searches. The fear of getting old. Or going broke. Were those the two words you thought of? Or being alone. We've sort of circled around this already. The fear of the devil. What does the Bible say those two words are? The Lord. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Can I paraphrase that? When you start to fear the Lord in an appropriate way, you start to get it. You start to understand. You start to grasp who God is. Our culture's goofed up on this point, and maybe some in this gathering. We go from one or the other extreme. We go from this knees knock and panic worry about this, those two words, the fear of the Lord, to, hey, Jesus, he's groovy like a beach party movie, you know. Me and Jesus, we cool. Really? Is that what the Bible's really teaching here? This is serious stuff. Did you know that the most common command in the Bible, the most common command in the Bible appears 150 times? Two words. Fear not. Fear not. I've said this before at Christmas time. It's a classic moment. Why did Jesus come as a baby? Because you don't go, oh, golly, it's a baby. You don't do that. Throughout the Bible, people run and hide from God because they're scared to death. Fear not. 150 times. One author observes this. Jesus knows that there are reasons for you to be afraid, yet he says, fear not. It's not like Jesus is living in this like safe little place in heaven where he just goes, here, I'm going to throw an impossible one your way. This will land on your lap and see what happens with this. No. He knows what you have and I have to fear. That list I made, and a whole lot more. Things bully us and leave us fearful. So what did Jesus know or see that allowed him to remain calm in the face of very fearful things? That's the balance of our time, and I absolutely love this story we're going to go to. It's in the Old Testament in 2 Kings chapter 6. So would you go to 2 Kings 6? It's on page 256. 2 Kings chapter 6. Here's a little background. Elisha was the successor to Elijah. So Elijah followed by Elisha. And Elijah was a powerful prophet of God in Israel. There's a name, there's a reason he's notorious. There's so many cool things in 1 Kings. Read 1 Kings and just look for him. Follow him around and you'll come away going, whoa, Elijah, amazing. So he had an understudy, an intern named Elisha. And Elisha was sort of shadowing him around. And he knew that Elijah was going to leave the scene. He was going to actually, turns out he's one of the few people that actually went to heaven without dying. And there's this wonderful chariot scene that takes him up in the early part of 2 Kings. While Elisha stood there and just dropped his dentures. He couldn't believe, it's like, and there he goes, and he's gone to heaven. So you got this Elisha. Now, before Elijah died, he asked for a double portion, which is a wonderful study. You could look into that a little bit further in the early going here in 2 Kings. In fact, all that I'm describing in kind of an introductory way of this scene is in chapter 2. So 2 Kings chapter 2. And he asked for this double portion of Elijah's spirit. I think a good landing spot on what that means is he asked for an anointing of a magnitude that Elijah possessed, and he asked actually the wrong guy because it wasn't Elijah's to give. He had no power to do that, but he expressed some sincere faith in saying, I want to have the kind of spiritual anointing in order to successfully carry out the leadership responsibility that God has for me, Elijah. And the wonderful, really wonderful news is that he got what he had prayed for. But chapter 6 is the scene I want us to see. And it's an amazing incident that happens that pits fear against faith. Okay? You're going to see this, and you're going to love this story. It involves a foreign enemy, the Arameans, okay? And They are a menacing neighbor to Israel. They're not good guys, and they mean ill. They are up to no good. And their king, presumably Ben-Hadad, historians would say, and that only matters for you who are really interested in details like that, but we're never told it actually his name. So Ben-Hadad, let's go with that. Anyway, he's the king of the Arameans, and they are launching a series of menacing raids. Their whole purpose is they're going to swoop into the camps of Israel, and they're going to plunder and pillage. They're going to take your jewelry and your possessions, and they're going to run back to their side and do it again later once you've rebuilt and, you know, whatever. So it's this menacing kind of situation, and the prophet Elisha now warns the king of Israel, who's a man named Joram. The king's name is J-O-R-A-M, and he warns him about the planned moves of the Arameans. In other words, he has inside information, and he tells the king, hey, king, guess what? They're about to come, and they're going to mess with us, and he tips off the king to what's about to take place. So I want you to see this. Verse 8 kind of picks up on this. Now, the king of Aram was at war with Israel. I've covered that. After conferring with his officers, he says, I will set up my camp in such and such a place. So that's the strategy. We're going to move our people over here. They're going to be flanked on that side and prepared to strike when Israel isn't watching. Okay? The man of God, that's a reference to who? Elisha. The man of God sends word to the king of Israel, and he warns him, this Joram, beware of passing that place because the Arameans are going down there. So Joram, the king of Israel, checked on the place indicated by the man of God, Elisha. Time and again, Elisha warned the king. So this wasn't a one-time deal. It's like, psst, king, don't go there. It's dangerous. Trust me. And he does this time and again so that he was on his guard in such places. Now, if you're Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, Arameans, you're hacked off. Because you're finding yourself sort of somebody new. In military terms, there's a mole. Somebody tipped off the king Joram, and they knew we were coming. The element of surprise gone. And he's thinking, I got to find who this was. However, he's told, there is no traitor, king. There's no traitor in our camp. There's a reason for it. I'll tell you, I found out. It's this guy named Elisha. And here's the deal. He has special powers. That's the best he could come up with. He's got some kind of special power to anticipate our next move. I don't know how he does it, but he's on it. That's what's going on here. So the king, smart king, Ben-Hadad, he concludes, as a king would conclude in that situation, I got to get this guy. I got to get Elisha. I got to neutralize this mole, this man of knowledge, this one that's causing us to be unsuccessful. I got to find him. So he issues an edict, find out where he lives, and they discover where he is. Verse 11 picks up on this. This enraged the king of Aram. He summoned his officers, demanded of them, will you not tell me which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? He's assuming it's within his own camp. None of us, my lord the king, said one of the officers. Elisha, the prophet, he tells the king of Israel, the very words you speak in your bedroom. Is that eerie or what? He knows what's going on. It's before listening devices. Go find out where he is, the king orders, so I can send men and capture him. The report came back. He's in Dothan. There's a city in Alabama named Dothan. I'm not sure why you would name your city Dothan. But anyway, sidebar. Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night and surrounded the city. Now here's where it gets very terrifying. Watch me. Or exciting. Say it again. Terrifying or exciting. Depending upon whom you favor. Two words describe what we're about to read. And before I read it, I want you to write them down. Okay? Depending on the accent point that you put next to these two words shapes a totally different outcome. The two words are, we're surrounded. Will you write those down? We're surrounded. That's how fear happens, by the way. It's that feeling of being surrounded, isn't it? It's like I have no exit. I can't go anywhere. There's no relief from this situation. We're surrounded, okay? So the first reaction is in verse 15. See if you know which one of the two this is. Terror or excitement. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. "Oh, my Lord, what shall we do?" the servant asked. Let's identify who we're talking about. This servant of the man of God. The man of God is? Elisha. His servant? We're never told a name. Let's call him a pit, a prophet in training. Works? All right? So Elisha has a pit. And this prophet in training, this understudy intern, gets up in the morning, opens the door where they're staying in Dothan, and looks out and goes, Oh no! Oh no, that was not a good feeling, but oh my goodness! This is terrible! And he looks in all directions, 360 degrees, and he sees nothing but threat. He sees terror on all sides. And people, let's understand something. Verse 15, he didn't imagine this. He didn't make this up in his head. This is real stuff. There is an army with arrows and chariots and warriors and bows and they're aiming at us. And their numbers are overwhelming. They were real. They were big. And they were bad. And this servant of Elisha saw it all. I just let my imagination run with this. I imagine he went out there, saw all this stuff. His knees were knocking. His teeth started chattering like it's freezing cold outside. And he comes running inside, closes the door, says, "Oh, no!" And his reaction, in my opinion, it makes verse 15 one of the most tame sentences in the scriptures. He doesn't come in, and please don't read it this way. "Oh, no. Oh, my Lord, what shall we do?" Like C-3PO, you know, on Star Wars. "Oh, what shall we do?" Folks, that's not what we're reading about here. Full-blown panic. "We're going to die, some of us, sooner than others." He could see where they were aiming their arrows. So you start to see, oh, no! As this fear bears in on him. He had to think, we are dead meat. Does those two words mean anything to anybody else but me? Meanwhile, sitting a few feet away, still enjoying his Noah's bagel and cream cheese at breakfast, the prophet, the man of God, Elisha, is a picture of peace. Man, complete calm. Apparently he looked up, at least. Maybe went outside briefly. Long enough to notice something that caused a very different reaction. Let's read it and then let's explain it. Don't be afraid. First words out of his mouth. Verse 16. Don't be afraid, Elisha said. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Are you seeing those words? Maybe for the first time again. And Elijah prayed, "Oh Lord, open my servant's eyes that he may see." Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes and he looked and saw the hills full of something different. Full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Clearly the mood went from, "Oh no, we're surrounded," to Elisha saying, "Oh yes, we're surrounded. Are you with me?" Elisha looks out, sees the same scene, but sees something totally extra. He sees chariots, he sees horses, he sees spears, but he sees something so, so much more. Oh, yes. Wow. On our sabbatical, Debbie and I took a hike, a series of hikes up at Mount Rainier. We went to a place called Comet Falls, and it's rated a strenuous, somewhere between moderate and a strenuous hike. And we thought, yeah, we're up for it. Let's do it, you know. And so we go, and it's pretty warm outside, and not over the top, but just warm enough to where we were sort of dressed down a little bit, you know, shorts and, you know, shirts, and we took off. And it's, I don't know, 20, 30 mile hike, something like that, no big deal, but it's actually 2 or 3 miles, I think. So we take off, but it's pretty steep, making it a strenuous hike, but we were told the view of this comet, the Comet Falls, the highest falls in the national parks, or some, had some marker like that. Makes it all worth it. So we get back in there. We get from about, here to the ministry center next door, that close to these falls, and we're at the bottom. Sort of a effect like Multnomah Falls when you're down there. If you get real close at the bottom bowl, it sprays up, and it leaves a mist on everything. You know, your hair and but we were, you know, huffing by that point, so we needed a little cool off. We get up there, and we're enjoying this scene, and and not noticing really anything around us except, wow, this is, you know, I have a friend that says God was on his A game when he made that place. And I really agreed. I thought, man, this is just amazing. And mist everywhere, so it sort of masked a few bigger drops that had landed on our arms. We didn't really notice, you know. Then we had noticed some photographers setting up for a shoot up there, and they were starting to wrap up their gear and put it away. And I'm like, "Hey, you guys just finished?" "No, but we're getting out of here, man." What came the answer, and it was a shout, you know, because of the thundering waterfall. And we're like, "What for?" And they go, "Check it out." And it was like the first time we looked up that high to notice. And almost on cue, when he said, "Look up," we heard this, you know, thinking, you know, grizzly bear. So I pulled out my knife, but I pull out my knife and it's a gun. that really sent him running, didn't it? You know, actually it was thunder. At first we couldn't figure it out. I said, "Did you hear that?" And moments later, more of it. And we see these guys moving in haste. And now the rain's starting to come. And the thunder. And it's getting louder and more frequent. And then in a kind of a weird moment, flashes started happening. Well, we're above tree line. That's a problem. Trees won't help you either. Being the good boy scout that I am, forgot almost everything I was ever taught about that moment. And honestly, people began to run by us. Not many people on this trail, 10 or so, but by twos or threes, they were running. And it's now all downhill. And some of them had already tripped and fallen and cut themselves and stuff, but they were hauling biscuit to get out of there. And I'm like, you know, Debbie, these people seem to be on to something here, and we better start moving. I'm trying to stay calm in all of this. And we start scooting down toward the parking lot, which was miles away. And suddenly a flash and a clap of thunder happened in exactly the same moment. Just a blinding flash. I thought I was on the road to Emmaus, you know, or Damascus with Paul. And it literally at the same time knocked us both to the ground in the trail. And we're like, oh my, and just instinctively when it happened, we just covered our ears because, and it was just, you know, just this rocket went off. And moments later, it happened again. And by now, the trail is a torrent of water, and hail is coming down and hitting us to a stinging point, and it's everywhere. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. We may not make it. And who's going to get my pickup truck? You know, that kind of stuff, right? So, yeah. So, we thought about, we literally did. We thought, you know what, Lord, we are dialed into you. We know our time and our lives are in your hands. And we just stopped and said, wait a minute. Matthew tells us a couple of times that Jesus quieted a storm. And we're gonna try that one right now. And all this is happening at supersonic speed, right? And I said, dear God, we, and Debbie's, amen. And I thought we were having a revival on the mountain, you know. Jesus, we command in your name that this storm stop, you know, and be still, be silent, stop, please, you know. And we went on like this for 30 seconds, just rebuking the winds. It's in Matthew 8, Matthew 14, right? And that was the last of the lightning. But you know what happened before the lightning stopped? I'm not kidding you about this. What happened? The panic in our heart, the storm inside, stopped. It's really true. It was a terrifying experience. And we got back. We got great pictures. Ask Debbie. They're on her cell phone. They're crazy pictures, but we were soaked, cold, but God came through. And we learned something then, and this story is a reminder of it. The presence of God changes everything. Everything. Could be a storm out there. It could be a storm, more likely, right inside here. Safety is not found, people, in the absence of danger. Safety is found in the presence of God. Isaiah, he got that point. Isaiah 41, verse 10, do not fear, for I am with you. He quotes God. Do not fear. How can you say that, Isaiah? Because I am with you, says the Lord. Do not anxiously look about you. For I am your God. I will strengthen you. Surely I will uphold you. Surely I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. John understood it too in 1 John chapter 4, verse 4. Greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. Elisha had eyes to see it. And the story goes on wonderfully to show that, in fact, his intern finally saw it. Let me finish the story and we'll close. As the enemy came down toward him, Elisha prayed to the Lord. This is verse 18. Strike these people with blindness. So he struck them with blindness, as Elijah had asked. Elijah told them, so imagine these foreigners, the Arameans coming in force. They're going to own this prophet. And then now they're suddenly blind as they're running toward where they were having breakfast. Elijah tells them when they arrive, this is not the road and this is not the city. Follow me and I'll lead you to the man you're looking for. So he led them to Samaria, a city nearby. Check this out. And they entered the city. When they entered the city afterwards, Elijah said, Lord, open their eyes now so that they can see. Imagine this. This is just crazy. Then the Lord opened their eyes and they looked around and thought, oh no, how do we end up here? By the way, Samaria is an Israeli stronghold. Well, you'll see what I mean. Verse 21. When the king of Israel saw them, he asked Elijah, should I just take care of business right now? Should I kill them? Shall I wipe them out? No, don't do this, he answered. Would you kill men whom you've captured with your own sword or bow? Set food and water before them so that they can eat and drink, and then go back to their master with a message. So he prepared a great feast for them. After they had finished eating and drinking, he sent them away, and they returned to their master. And the bands from Aram stopped raiding Israel. Baby. I love that story. I want to leave you with this reality check. It's time for some of us to slay the bully of fear. But I want you to hear this clearly, because some have the lug nut of courage is completely loose or gone. If you have Jesus, threatening foes don't disappear. They don't. They don't go away, but fear does. If you don't have Jesus, threatening foes will steal, kill, and destroy, and they are real. And in fact, I say this with compassion and conviction, you have every reason to fear. Did you hear what I said? If you don't have Jesus, the devil will steal, kill, and destroy, and you have every reason to fear that. I'd like you to bow your heads, if you would, this morning. You are a great God that we have sung about. And we live in a world of realities. Things that we see and sense and feel. Awarenesses that we have, Lord, that create a fear factor in us. It has created a fear culture. And many of us are bullied on a regular basis by that. We go back to the beginning of this talk and remember that the fear of the Lord is the only legitimate fear. In fact, it's the fear that makes sense out of everything else. It's the fear that marks the beginning of knowledge. Will you listen very carefully right now? Don't be distracted by anything. If you can't go to a time in your spiritual journey where you cried out, God, have mercy on me, the sinner. And where you know that the deserved wrath of God against you for your sin was transferred to his son Jesus on a cross, then you have every reason this morning to fear. You're not protected. You're not covered. Come to Jesus this morning. But if you don't, I'm praying that God will bring you to him soon. If you do know of a time where Jesus had mercy on you and forgave your sin and gave you a new heart and now lives within you, you can say with David, Since the Lord is my salvation, whom shall I fear? Because after all, you have Jesus, the cure for fear, the only cure. Love you, Jesus. We really do. Thank you for coming as a babe, drawing us in. Even this morning, drawing many in to you. Thank you for the victory. Thank you for your great presence in times of crippling fear that brings us peace. If you need to take next steps with Jesus, would you talk to me? I'll put you in touch with someone, a leader in our church that will help you take the next step. Let's respond and worship as we stand together and sing a final song.